Chapter 26. Spire Albion, Habel Landing, Temple of the Way. Gwendolyn watched Bridget hand her cousin's weaponry back to him, and carefully did not smirk. For goodness sake, Gwen had been standing just as close to him, and with empty arms as well, and yet Benny had turned to the girl with the cat almost instinctively when he began to disarm himself. Benedict had expressed to Gwen his determination to avoid entanglements with a wife in no uncertain terms on any number of occasions. He had even been something very nearly rude to Mother when she had pressed one too many partners upon him at a dance 2 years ago. It was not as though there were no young ladies interested in him. Oh, granted, none of the highest tier of eligible ladies would have considered a union with a young warrior born, even if he'd been a full member of House Lancaster. Well, perhaps if he'd been the heir, she supposed. But the ladies of the lesser houses could very well better their position through a union with Benedict. There was also, she thought, always that sort of person who would gladly seek a tryst with one of the warrior born simply for the thrill of something so outré. Benedict was, of course, a fine-looking young man. He had been pursued by any number of young, or youngish, widows when he came of age, but he had ignored them all with steady, polite reserve. Now he spoke quietly with Bridget and the Wayist monk, and Gwendolyn felt immensely pleased for him. She had known Bridget long enough to feel certain that she had no designs on Benedict for the sake of his endowments, monetary or otherwise. And while Bridget seemed to have very little in the way of social graces, such things could be learned. Anyway, courage and integrity were more important, and the girl had those in excess. The name of Targwyn still carried weight in some corners of the Habel, too. Mother could be convinced to bless such a union. Of course, Benedict would be sure to make a hash of things if left to his own devices. Thank goodness he had someone to smooth the way for him. When the time was right, naturally. Gwendolyn smiled in satisfaction and followed the monk into the temple with the rest of her group. She was entirely unprepared for what she found in the interior of the temple. She had expected a rather simple arrangement, and indeed it was, in the extreme. But the monks had transformed the courtyard behind the temple's heavy gate into a garden so lush and thick that even those in her family's estates simply could not compare. Every square foot that could be spared, she saw, had been devoted to planters of masonry filled with rich black earth transported painstakingly from the surface. Each planter supported a fine net of silken threads above it, spangled with small lumen crystals that glowed like a thousand stars, bathing the whole of the courtyard in rich silver radiance. Beneath the woven nets of light grew fruit trees, grapevines, rows of vegetables and grains, as well as flowers, small trees, ferns, and leafy bushes she could not identify. Foodstuffs growing from the filthy soil of the surface, rather than in a proper water garden treated with nutrient-bearing vat sand. The very thought was somewhat nauseating. Why do such a thing? The smell of the place was simply shocking. It filled the air with a riot of scents, sharp and pungent, rotten and sweet, and above all, very, very alive. The air itself seemed different, thick and swollen with moisture. The impression of the whole was that of rampant life, growing as wild as the deadly green hell covering the surface of the world, and she felt her heart speed up in an immediate irrational reaction of instinctive fear. Her rational mind told her that clearly there was no danger here. Any number of monks were moving quietly through the plants in their saffron garb, trimming and tending and weeding. Insects buzzed through the air, many of them striped with yellow and black. Bees? Goodness, she hadn't known anyone had been able to successfully transplant a colony to Spire Albion. As far as she knew, only the pikers had managed to successfully manage beehives, and their near monopoly of the honey and mead market provided the cornerstone for their economy. Well, if this garden could support something as fragile as bees, surely the place couldn't be all that threatening, regardless of how nightmarish it might look. She took a breath and steadied herself, and pressed forward through the vegetation, following her cousin and brother Vincent. There must have been 200 feet of the bizarre gardens between the gate and the temple proper, which rose up to a height of 4 stories and was built of excellent masonry. The building looked nearly as square and as solid and as fixed as if it had been made of spire stone by the builders themselves. Despite its height, it managed to appear squat and thick, as if determined to resist the sheer idea of any assault, much less the actual attack that might spring from such a notion. 2 more of the monks, armed as Brother Vincent had been, stood at the main doors of the temple and watched in stoic silence as Gwendolyn's group followed their guide within. Gwen expected the inside of the temple to match its stony exterior, but to her surprise she found that it was warmly lit and decorated with paintings and banners bearing proverbs in Wayist script. Some of the paintings, though they depicted iconic figures of the Wayist faith, had been masterfully produced. In their own way, they were a match for the collection they'd seen in the Spire Arch Manor. The floor was made of stone blocks, but was painted a deep green colour, except for a brown path that wavered back and forth down the hallway. So many feet had walked upon the painted path that in its centre the paint had worn away, and the stone itself had been worn down along with it. With the others, Gwen found herself naturally following the depression along the hallway, the soles of her feet 1 inch below the proper level of the floor. "The meal room?" Benedict asked. "It seems simplest," Brother Vincent said. The monk looked over his shoulder and smiled at Gwen. "You seem surprised, miss. It's very lovely in here, really," Gwen found herself replying. "It's not at all like it appears to be on the outside."
"Is anything?" asked Brother Vincent with a small smile.
"Here we go," Benedict said beneath his breath. Gwen arched an eyebrow at her cousin and turned back to Brother Vincent.
"Wouldn't it be faster to walk in straight lines rather than wandering back and forth like this? This way does not seem sensible."
The monk's smile widened.
"Did anyone forbid you to do so?"
"Well, no," Gwen said.
"Why aren't you walking the way you believe to be sensible, then?"
Gwen blinked.
"Well, it was obviously the way everyone walks here, I suppose."
"Did you wish to avoid offending our sensibilities?"
"No, not exactly,"
Gwen said.
"It just... it seemed the proper thing to do."
Brother Vincent nodded.
"Why?"
"Because, well, look at it. The stones are all worn down where everyone has walked."
"Do you feel you should walk the same path because so many have walked it before you came, miss?"
Gwen glanced at Benedict, but her cousin only looked back at her in silence, apparently interested in her answer.
"No, of course not. Except... yes, in a way. I hadn't really given it any thought."
"Few do."
Brother Vincent bowed his head and turned to continue leading them down the hallway, and Gwen had the sudden impression, from his body language, that he was a teacher who had just concluded a lesson. She felt her back stiffen slightly.
"Brother Vincent," she said, in what she felt must be a tempered yet iron tone. "Are you trying to trick me into becoming a Wayist?"
She couldn't see his face, but from where she stood she could see his cheeks round out as he smiled.
"In the void there is no distinction of East and West."
Gwen blinked slightly at that.
"I know all of those words, and yet when strung together like that I have no idea what they mean."
The monk nodded.
"Perhaps you are choosing not to hear them."
Gwen sighed in exasperation.
"Benedict!"
Her cousin turned to walk backward for a few paces and smiled.
He's like that, cuz.
I don't know what he means either. It's his way.
The monk carefully did not turn, and Gwen suddenly felt that the man might be laughing at her, so she sniffed once, lifted her chin firmly, and started walking in a straight line down the hall, wayest custom be damned. She tripped on the irregular surface a few seconds later, and all but fell. After that she lowered her chin enough to make sure she could watch where she put her feet.
"Pardon me, brother," Master Ferris said a moment later. "But might I trouble you to show us the collection, if it isn't too much trouble? My apprentice has never seen it."
Brother Vincent's face lit up as if the etherealist had just offered to cook him a fine meal.
"Of course, sir. It's on the way, after all."
Master Ferris beamed.
"Excellent. Attend, Folly."
"Yes, master,"
the apprentice said.
"Collection?"
Gwen said.
"What collection?"
Vincent's eyes gleamed. He stopped at a very large, very heavy door and opened it with a gentle push of his hand. The enormous thing swung open wide, silently and smoothly, to reveal an immense chamber beyond.
"Ladies and gentlemen," he said in a quiet, vibrant tone, "the great library of Spire Albion."
Gwen felt her eyes widen. The great library was huge. It must have taken up 3/4 of the space of the entire temple all by itself. The ground floor was filled with shelving and work tables, and every inch of shelf space was crammed with books, books of every size and shape and colour. Why, the collection here beggared the one at her academy. That had been a library of nearly 3,000 volumes, and it wouldn't have taken up 1/10 of the space of the ground floor of the library. And there were 3 tiers of shelves circling the outer wall of the library above the ground floor, each accessed by balconies and multiple series of staircases. More monks moved around the upper floors, dusting and tidying the shelves. All in all, there were more books in the library, Gwen felt sure, than she had seen in the entirety of her life outside it. 12 saffron-robed monks were seated at the tables, copying volumes by hand, while younger initiates carried paper, sprinkled sand over pages to dry the still wet ink, and performed any number of other tasks to support the effort. Gentle music drifted through the air from a pair of monks playing wooden flutes in elegantly interwoven melodies. Gwen stared for several silent seconds, and then realized that she was attempting to calculate the approximate value of the books, based solely upon their materials. The paper for each book was representative of more wood than its volume would suggest. House Lancaster had a library of 700 volumes, but it was one of the wealthiest houses in all of Spire Albion. Habil Morning's academy had nearly 1,000 volumes collected over 2 centuries, some of them quite old and valuable. But this place? The great library could scarcely have been more costly, in a purely monetary sense, if its walls and floors had been coated with gold. But that was, she supposed, in keeping with the rest of Habil Landing. Entire buildings had been made of wood here, in their mad division of their working space. She had known the local economy was vigorous, but she'd had no idea that the level of commerce taking place here dwarfed that of Habil Morning itself. All that construction would have required milling of the wood, resulting in mountains of sawdust. Perhaps that had been the source of raw materials for the paper in the volumes before her. That might have lowered the price, but all the same, the books represented a genuine fortune amongst a group of men and women who were known for their pathological avoidance of excess or material gain. It also went a great way toward explaining why the monks so strongly discouraged casual visits to the temple, she supposed. Her own family's vatteries weren't precisely open to the public either.
"Oh,"
Folly breathed out loud. The oddly dressed girl was staring at the library with round eyes.
"Oh, is that?"
"Oh, yes," Master Ferris replied.
"I've never, never felt this in our library, Master."
"Felt what?"
Ferris asked. His voice was gentle, but his eyes, thought Gwen, were rather sharp. Folly was silent for a moment before she said,
"I'm not sure."
"Think on it," Ferris suggested.
He turned to Brother Vincent and asked,
"Might she remain here, quietly, while we take tea, brother? I give you my word that she will give you no offence."
Brother Vincent bowed at the waist. Then he stepped aside and murmured something to one of the apprentices before moving back toward the group.
"Miss, please do not touch any of the volumes without consulting one of my order."
Folly tensed when the monk spoke to her, and cradled her jar of little crystals close to her chin.
"Oh, he spoke to me. Ought I tell him that I understand?" "No, of course not. He knows now, because I asked you about it."
"There,"
Master Ferris said with a pleased smile.
"Now, about that tea?"
Brother Vincent studied the etherealist's apprentice for a speculative moment, then smiled at Master Ferris and said,
"This way."
The monk led them to a modest dining hall, featuring low, round tables made of copper-clad iron, surrounded by sturdy cushions instead of chairs. Gwen was unsure of the dignity of such novel seating, but she managed to sit down upon one of the cushions with what she felt sure was acceptable grace, and within moments they were sipping at cups of hot, excellent tea, sweetened with scandalous portions of honey. Raoul had a small bowl of his own. The cat wasn't satisfied until Bridget had spooned twice as much honey as anyone else had into it. Once they had all sipped, or lapped, Brother Vincent nodded and turned to Benedict, who sat at his right.
"Very well, then. Tell me."
Benedict made a round of introductions and gave a concise account of the events of the past days, including the purpose of their own visit to Landing.
"In short," he said, "we need a place to stay that is free of any undue influence of the guilds. It was my hope that the Walker could be convinced to allow us to operate from here, brother. It's the most secure place we could ask for."
"Walker?"
Gwen asked.
"The foremost brother or sister at the temple," Brother Vincent said, smiling.
He turned back to Benedict and shook his bald head.
"I'm sorry, son.
The laws of our order are precisely that. The Waste Temples do not take sides in political disputes of any kind."
"But this is your home,"
Gwen blurted.
"If the Aurorans conquer Albion, they conquer you along with it."
"The Temple of the Way in Spire Aurora operates quite peacefully,"
Brother Vincent said in a mild tone.
"We would deeply regret the loss of life that such a conquest would necessitate. We would help the wounded and the bereft in any way that we could. We would peaceably protest any inhumanity perpetrated by either side, and accept the consequences of that protest. But we are neither soldiers nor warriors here, Miss Lancaster. That is not our path."
"I don't remember asking you to fight anyone for me, Brother Vincent,"
Gwendolen replied.
"I have recently discovered that I have something of a knack for it."
"Should we permit you to use the temple as the base of your inquisition, it would create the impression of partisanship with the Spireark. We deeply respect his authority and his restraint, but the purpose of our temple is to serve all humanity, not merely the inhabitants of one spire."
Benedict smiled without much humour.
"Which is the answer I expected you to give, brother. Perhaps you have a suggestion as to where we might stay in relative safety. It's been a while since I was last here, and even then I didn't know the Habil as well as the Order does."
Brother Vincent took a long, slow sip of his tea. His eyes narrowed in thought. If you're searching for an entirely honourable proprietor in this habble, I hope you brought considerable supplies to sustain you.
He returned Benedict's faint smile with one of his own.
It's all the money, I think. It does strange things to some people.
Surely some must be better than others, Benedict said.
Some certainly appear to be, Vincent replied. Whether the truth matches the appearance is another matter. I have often heard it said that anything in Landing has a price, especially loyalty.
Gwendolen lowered her cup and stated,
We don't need an honourable innkeeper, Benny.
Her cousin blinked at her.
We don't?
Not at all. We simply need one who sells his loyalty with adequate integrity.
She turned to Brother Vincent.
Is there an innkeeper who, when bought, remains bought?
The monk raised his eyebrows.
A mercenary innkeep?
It is the quickest way, and we are in something of a hurry, Gwen said.
Vincent seemed to muse over that for a moment before saying,
Giving you even so little a thing as our advice strains the neutrality the Order has worked hard to cultivate.
What if we are not asking Brother Vincent? Gwen said. Suppose we ask my cousin's old teacher, Vincent, for a recommendation.
Sophistry, the monk said, and threadbare at that.
We're simply having conversation over tea,
Gwendolen pointed out firmly.
It isn't as though the Spirearch has written requesting your aid.
Brother Vincent pursed his lips.
I must carefully consider the impact my actions might have on the Order and other followers of the Way.
While you're at it, Gwen said, perhaps you should consider the impact your lack of action might have on the Wayists of Spire Albion, along with all of their neighbours. Surely they are included in the roles of the humanity you say you wish to serve.
Brother Vincent blinked several times. Then he said in a mild tone,
You don't take hints terribly well, do you, Miss Lancaster?
Perhaps I'm choosing not to hear them,
Gwen replied in a honeyed tone. Something that looked suspiciously like a newborn smile suddenly danced in the monk's eyes. Gwendolen smiled brightly back at him.